This is Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Celtic Connections, the show with the Catholic view of what's happening right now in Great Britain, in Ireland, and across Europe. Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Broadcasting from Ireland.
Hello and welcome to Celtic Connections. I'm Cathy Sinnott and I'm coming to you from Wicklow in Ireland today. Last week, I had the privilege of being present at what I believe will prove to be a pivotal moment for England and Wales. I was in Westminster Cathedral, London, when His Eminence Vincent Nicholls, Cardinal Archbishop of Westminster, made a consecration of England and Wales to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And at the same time, he crowned the National Pilgrim Virgin statue of Our Lady of Fatima. And all of this was in Westminster Cathedral, which was packed, so full that hundreds of people were left outside. Thankfully, I had a front row seat, and I could see everything that occurred, which was truly a momentous day. This was something I will never forget. And it's given me great hope, not only for England and Wales, but for both of these islands, including Ireland and Scotland. The service began with the procession of Our Lady statue down the central aisle of this great cathedral, carried by the Knights of Columba. And leading the procession were three little children dressed up as the three seers, Francesco, Jacinta, and Lucia. And as we sang the beautiful Fatima hymn, Ave, Ave, Ave Maria, everyone held aloft and waved white handkerchiefs in the air. It was so beautiful to behold. And I can tell you, you could sense Our Lady's presence and her joy in those moments. And I had the overwhelming sense that something fundamental had changed that day in Great Britain. There is no doubt that Our Lady will be more than ever before a channel of immense grace for that country in the coming weeks and months and years. Today, in this special edition of Celtic Connections, commemorating this amazing event, you will hear highlights of the consecration at Westminster Cathedral, including Cardinal Nicholls' excellent homily. But we begin by hearing from several world-renowned experts who attended a symposium on Fatima, and this symposium was held directly after the consecration in the Westminster Cathedral Hall. And I had the privilege of hosting this symposium for EWTN. And take note, we recorded this for television, so although you're getting a preview of it now, watch for it on EWTN television in the coming weeks. Now, included in the symposium from the World Apostolate of Fatima, both from England and Wales and also internationally, included Timothy Tyndall Robertson, who's national president and author of the book Fatima, Russia, and Pope John Paul II. Also, Donal Anthony Foley, who's the World Apostolate for Fatima's secretary in England and Wales. Also, Anuno Prezirish, who's the International Secretary of the World Apostolate of Fatima, and whose grandfather witnessed the great miracle of the sun at Fatima in 1917. So to begin our special program on Fatima, here are some inspiring highlights from the symposium. Okay, we have Nuno Prezirish. And Nuno has come from Portugal, and he's the International Director of the Secretariat of the World Apostolate of Fatima since 2004. And now Nuno is from Fatima. Born and raised?
Yes.
He has spent time in England in university, studying theology. He has also spent time on the missions in Mozambique. And he's married with three children.
Got it.
So again, the family. And part of his work in the Secretariat is to assist the various national World Apostolates of Fatima in their formation and in their pastoral programs. So Nuno, we're looking forward to what you have to say.
Thank you. Having heard these people speaking beautiful English, you have now to cope with somebody that will rather speak Portuguese. But hope you can follow me. Well,
we'll make that a sacrifice for the conversion of sinners.
Great. Well, it is, I can say, a great honor and privilege to be part of this memorable program, a program that you have prepared in great detail, which by itself, I believe, is an expression of your tremendous love for the Blessed Virgin Mary, and at the same time shows also your zeal for our apostolate's mission, that of always striving to better live and spread the message of Fatima. And having said this, I was asked to speak about the centenary celebrations at the Shrine of Fatima, and also to share with you some of my family stories in relation to the Fatima apparitions and to the 3 seers of Fatima back in 1917. Well, I have rephrased the theme of my talk with this title: the Fatima centenary celebrations, from joyful memory to personal commitment. And since time is what it is, we have seen it, rather short, I have decided to begin first with my family stories, and then to conclude offering you a reflection on the centenary apparitions. My grandfather, whose name was Manuel Francisco, another Francisco, was 13 years old at the time of the apparitions. It was at that age that he first heard the story of Our Lady's apparitions. And he heard it viva voce from his friends Lucia, Francisco and Jacinta, because he lived close to the same village in Aljustrel where these children lived with their families. And so often they were together, either playing in the fields, tending their parents' flock of sheep, or simply going to church for Mass or for catechesis. As a result of this relationship with them, my grandfather followed closely the happenings at the covered area. And on that October 13th, 1917, he too was among the crowd which had the privilege to see the extraordinary miracle of the sun, the great sign from heaven that Our Lady had promised to perform for all to see and believe. And I will tell you more about this farther ahead. The scope here, as you will understand, is not to focus on the life of my grandfather, who was a normal boy like any child of his time, but to use his own account to underline the relevance of the Fatima message and spirituality of the little shepherds for us today. I had the joy to spend hours and hours sitting around the dinner table just listening to the stories my father had to tell me. He lived a long life and passed away at the beautiful age of 94. Every time I asked him to tell me more about the time of the apparitions, he would start speaking with great passion and enthusiasm. Because in a way, he too felt part of this story, even if he never saw the angel or Our Lady. Well, he wished he had, though. In fact, sometimes, with a smile, he told me, almost in confidence, "I don't understand why Our Lady has not appeared to me. I spent so much time with these little children. I was all the time with them. Why was I not chosen?" Then he would add, "Maybe I was not as good as they were." And I would say, "Well, grandfather, I don't think that was the reason. It is just that God had planned it to be that way. And mind you, maybe if you had seen Our Lady, I wouldn't be here today." And then my grandfather would laugh and simply say, "It's true. God always knows better." And the reality is that God chose three humble, innocent, and pure-hearted children to remind us, to remind each one of us, that unless you turn and become like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Fatima is a permanent reminder to each one of us of this evangelical truth. Well, this weekend, we are also preparing ourselves to celebrate the liturgical feast of Blessed Francisco and Jacinta Marto on February 20th. My grandfather had a great affection for Francisco, maybe because being a boy, he spent more time with him than with the girls before the apparitions. They used to go together to look for birds' nests, building little walls with stones, playing their childish games, etc. But after the apparitions, Francisco became entirely focused on the things of God. As we know, Francisco could not hear the angels' words or Our Lady's words. And yet, he was deeply immersed in that supernatural experience. Lucy writes that Francisco was very sad because of the enormous hurt that the sins of humankind were causing to Jesus. After the July apparition, Francisco said this beautiful expression, "We were on fire in that light which is God, and yet we were not burned. What is God? We could never put it into words. What a pity he is so sad. If only I could console him." Well, it was already said here. His task was to console him, making reparation to him with love and asking people not to offend him anymore, because he was already much offended. My grandfather told me that after the first apparition, Francisco used to hide himself in order to pray when he was in the fields. Also, he sometimes missed school so as to spend time in the church, close to the tabernacle with the hidden Jesus, as he liked to say. He said to Lucia, "You go to school, and I will stay here in the church, close to the hidden Jesus. It is not worth my while learning to read, as I will be going to heaven very soon." In fact, I heard from my grandfather that there were times he saw Francisco in church, in the parish church of Fatima, prostrated in front of the tabernacle, completely absorbed in God. Such was the intimacy he had with the hidden Jesus to console him. One night, Francisco's father asked him why he was sobbing, believing he had hurt himself. And you know what Francisco said? "I was thinking of Jesus, who is so sad because of the sins committed against him." And the same could be said about Jacinta. My colleague at the International Secretariat in Fatima, Anna Reis, whose grandmother was the first cousin of Francisco and Jacinta, tells that her grandmother still wore most of the clothes from Jacinta. Families were quite poor at that time, and this was a common thing to do. The clothes would pass from one person to another person. Maybe it was the same here in this country. Her mother used to tell her, "Because you are dressing the clothes of Jacinta, you have to be as good as she was." We have not her physical clothes anymore with us, here. Not here, not anywhere else. But we have her relics, which we have just venerated at the cathedral. And this is really a call to imitate Jacinta and to become as good as she was. But to imitate her, what does it mean? Well, it means to lead a life showing great love for Jesus and for sinners, that is, those most in need of God's mercy, by offering God our prayers and penance in reparation to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Just before Francisco went to heaven, Jacinta said, and I quote, "Give all my love to our Lord and to our Lady, and tell them that I will suffer as much as they want for the conversion of sinners and in reparation to the Immaculate Heart of Mary." What an example. Little Jacinta, 7 years old, having such a deep understanding of what God was and what He wanted us to do.
You're listening to highlights from a symposium on Fatima held last Saturday in Westminster Cathedral Hall, London, and this followed the historic reconsecration of England and Wales to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
And then I've spoken about Francisco, I've spoken a little bit about Jacinta, and then we also have Sister Lucia. Sometimes we forget to speak about her because she died only 12 years ago. Sister Lucia de Jesus, the shepherdess that was chosen by Our Lady to stay longer on this earth to spread her message, in particular to spread devotion to her Immaculate Heart. Sister Lucia, left alone after her cousin's death, incarnated this difficult mission, always with humility and in faithful obedience to God and to the Church, so that the message of Fatima could be known and lived by many. She, despite the walls of her cloistered Carmelite convent, was a woman attentive to the destinies of the world and always concerned with people's welfare, praying and indicating to them, often through written correspondence, the path of God. That's why the process of beatification, which has begun and is advancing well, took some time to prepare it because she had written so many letters. There were so many documents to be studied because she had this attention towards people. She always wanted to give an answer to them. Anyway, and now I come to that October apparition in Fatima, as I said before. My grandfather was present at the Covaderie on that day. He remembered well to have left his home early morning to walk to the place of the apparition, and it was raining heavily. When he reached the place, he saw already a big crowd that was there waiting for something. He was impressed, and I would say, as he told me, also a little bit scared, because he had never seen so many people together in all his life. He got as close as possible to the place where the three little shepherds used to wait for the Blessed Virgin Mary to appear. And he stood close to the big olmok tree that still stands at the shrine esplanade. The rain continued pouring down that morning. And it was only after or during the apparition of Our Lady that all of a sudden the sky opened up and the crowd saw the sun coming out as a silver disc, dancing over people's heads, spreading its multicultured rays to all sides, looking as if it was going to fall down on them. People prayed, and some even asked publicly forgiveness for their sins, as they thought it was going to be the end of the world at that time. And I recall my grandfather telling me this story, this experience he had, always with that enthusiasm. And he told me that, well, I was not afraid during the miracle of the sun. I was indeed quite impressed with the movements the sun was making, as well as with the fact that I was looking at the sun and I didn't get blind. I could look at it without getting blind. He thought that such phenomenon could only be coming from God, because no human hands could do it. That was his opinion at that time. But really, what impressed him most was not even the miracle of the sun, and that was witnessed by, people say, about 70,000 people that were there, and also people in village nearby Fatima. What impressed him most was the fact that his clothes, wet all through because of the rain on that day, had dried up in a couple of minutes during the miracle. And so my grandfather from that day on although he always had believed the stories of his friends, Francisco, Jacinta and Lucia, he had the full confirmation that the apparitions were true and were coming from God. From that day onwards, he too began praying his rosary every day, as Our Lady requested. And prayer is what can change people's hearts and consequently our fragile world. The apparition of October 13th, in which Our Lady reveals that she is Our Lady of the Rosary, offers us, in line with the rest of the message, the purpose of her visit. She says, "Do not offend our Lord and God anymore, because he's already so much offended." How loving a complaint, how tender a request from a mother. Will we comply? Are we doing everything at our reach to please God and build a better world? Peace is needed, not only in places where weapons are being used to kill one another, but anywhere and any time a person is treated badly, abortion is committed, families are destroyed, human dignity is not respected, racial and religious hatred is fostered, and injustices are simply normal business. So, with these stories which I have told you, making connection with the time of the apparitions, I'd like now to go a little bit farther ahead, and because of time as well, and to move on to tell you a little bit about the centenary celebrations at the Shrine of Fatima. And one might ask, why is it important to celebrate, and to celebrate solemnly, the centenary of Our Lady's apparition in Fatima? Well, I think the answer is simple. The celebration of this jubilee is a time of grace, is a unique opportunity. It's like a festive portico to the message of Fatima that will help us to contemplate and enjoy the tenderness and mercy of God, revealed through the Immaculate Heart of Mary, refuge and path to God. And besides, the centenary gives us the opportunity to accept or renew our commitment to the challenges that the message poses to each one of us. I wish you all a blessed and joyful Fatima Jubilee with God's abundant graces. Thank you.
Next, we're going to go to Donal Anthony Foley. And Donal is the Secretary of the World Apostolate of Fatima for England and Wales. And Donal has first went to Fatima. I think you fell in love with Fatima, organizing a trip to Fatima. And a walking pilgrimage at that. I'm very impressed. You know, was that walk from England?
Some of the people actually did walk from England. I only did the last week, which is from the Spanish border to Fatima.
Okay.
So that was enough.
That's very impressive, you know, in terms of sacrifice. Donal is also a supply teacher and an author. But I think we should move on and listen to Donal, because he goes all over the country spreading the news of Fatima. Great. Thank you, Donal.
Thanks, Kathy. I'm going to talk a bit about the Five First Saturdays. So got some slides. So the first slide, some of you might not have been to Fatima, I don't know. But this is just, if you haven't been, or just to be reminded, just to put what I'm going to say into context. So the first slide should show now just what the Fatima sanctuary looks like. That's the basilica in the background, and the little chapel where Our Lady, commemorating where Our Lady appeared, is down there on the left, that picture. Now if we go on to the next slide, that's actually the spot where Our Lady appeared, and that's how it's commemorated. And there's a statue behind the protective screen, and the little chapel there was the first chapel that was built in Fatima. And then just a few more slides. The next slide just shows, just as we had today in the cathedral, which is obviously on a bigger scale, the statue of Our Lady being taken around the sanctuary at Fatima. And then in the next slide, just to give you an idea of the scale of Fatima, that was a picture taken from the top of the Basilica Tower in 2000 when it was the Beatification Mass. So you can see the huge crowd there all the way back. And the people in white at the front, they're all the priests. So you can imagine how many priests there were on the day. But that's just the context. So So if we go on to the next slide, this then just shows the reality of what actually happened at Fatima, that Our Lady didn't appear in some great metropolis or parliament or even in a church, just in a field with the three children. It could not have been a more humble appearance, really. And yet the message is so incredibly important that we're still living out the consequences of it now and for decades to come. So that's the sort of context. So that was where she appeared on the 13th of May and June. So now we're going to sort of skip forward to the 13th of July. But during those first two apparitions, Our Lady said quite a few things to the children, but she told them that they were going to go to heaven, and also they saw in the light from her hands, they had an experience of God. So an experience of heaven, if you like. So they knew they were going there, and they in some way experienced heaven. So that puts what happened then in the July apparition, the third apparition, in context. So we go on to the next slide. Go on to the second part of the secret. So this was July. So the first, Our Lady showed the children a vision of hell, but bearing in mind that they knew they were going to heaven. But that is the context of the second part of the secret, which is where we get the five first Saturdays from. So it immediately shows us that the second part of the secret and what Our Lady was saying is important and serious. It's not given in a sort of a light-hearted way. So they saw hell, and she was saying, this is where the souls of poor sinners go. And to save them, God wishes to establish in the world devotion to my Immaculate Heart. If what I say to you is done, many souls will be saved and there will be peace. So I thought it was very interesting and very good today that the Cardinal, in his homily, he sort of homed in on this whole idea of devotion to Our Lady and the Rosary. So he hit the sort of two most important things in sort of an excellent homily. So that's really what it's about, this idea of devotion, that somehow that's got to spread throughout the world. So you can see how much work is needed to make that a reality. And when that's a reality, that's when the world will know peace. So that was what Our Lady was saying. It was a very serious context. She was talking about the war. So that was the World War I. That war was going to end. But then warning about another war to come. That was obviously World War II. It was during the pontificate of Pius XI. And she spoke about the unknown light in the sky. Well, that happened in 1938 when there was this great aurora type phenomenon which came right down to the south of Europe, when usually they're only seen in very northerly parts. So that was a sign in 1938, and what was going to happen was the world would be punished by means of war, famine, and persecutions of the Church and the Holy Father. So those are all the things that the world has experienced during the 20th century, and still obviously going on now in places like Syria and other parts of the world. And this is the sort of why this is so important. She said, to prevent this, in other words, all these terrible things, war, famine, all the horrors that people know about, you know, and people have experienced, to prevent this, she said two things. I shall come to ask for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart and the communion of reparation on the first Saturdays. So that's where the first Saturdays bit comes in. And Our Lady mention those two, but they're very interesting thing. She linked it to the consecration of Russia. So those two things are obviously very important, because she said, you know, I shall come. She was going to come back and speak about them in more detail. Now the problem is that if you're looking at a DVD or reading the book or whatever, you go through this paragraph and it's gone and it's over, and maybe it doesn't really sink in. But that this is a really, really important point. These two things are linked. So we go on to the next slide, just to emphasize it. You've got, that was a sort of a representation of the aurora. The sky was a blood red color. And probably now there are probably people, well, it's 1938, so people who are children will still be alive who've seen that. Perhaps some of you saw it when you were children, I just don't know. But that was what they experienced. That's Pius XI, the Pope who was reigning at the time. And no prizes for guessing who the third figure is, Hitler. But the other interesting thing is that Hitler had this sort of retreat at a place called the Berghof in Germany, where they were gathered with his sort of entourage on that night, and they saw the aurora. And Hitler made a remark, something to the effect of, now is the time of blood. He saw the sky and he knew that now, so it was in his mind, obviously, what he was going to do, that he was going to unleash this war that would cause so much bloodshed. So there you are, that's the terrible choice we face, that we can choose evil, and if you're as powerful as Hitler was, you can cause him terrible, terrible suffering. But that, anyway, that's the context of all the things Our Lady was saying. So if we go on to the next slide. Again, war, famine, persecution of the Church and the Holy Father. To us, to most of us anyway, they're just really words. And perhaps some of you have experienced war abroad, I don't know, but we really need to sort of, this is why we need to slow down when we're looking at the Fatima message and not just skip on to the next thing. You know, to really read what Our Lady said, and particularly the July apparition, what Our Lady said there, because that is the sort of the crucial teaching that she did when she was with the children. Of course, remembering that they were just young children. So she just explained everything slowly and carefully to them. So that's the reality of all those things. So we go on to the next slide. Now, so she's saying, if her requests were heeded, Russia would be converted and there will be peace. If not, she will spread errors throughout the world, causing all those problems. Well, that's exactly what we've experienced. And even though communism collapsed, you know, as Tim was saying, sort of early 90s, the errors of Russia have sort of transmuted into materialism and atheism, which has sort of infected our society now. So we are now living out the sort of, it's like a body decomposing, you know, the smell gets worse, if you like, you know, as the thing gets worse. We are living out in that sort of period of the errors infiltrating our society. So now we've got this terrible culture of death, which is all around us, a sort of pornography, drugs, violence, you know, the whole thing. But we do have the answer, as Our Lady was saying, if her requests were heeded, then all these things can be undone when enough people actually do what she asked for. And this is the great promise of Fatima. She's saying, in the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, and she will be converted, and a period of peace will be granted to the world. So that is really what the core message of what Our Lady was saying, and why it's so important for us all to take up this message, because we've got this promise of peace, and Russia will be converted, consecration and converted, and Russia will go from being sort of the sort of centre of world communism and atheism and the whole anti-God movement to being a great force for good. But for that to happen, because the Five First Saturdays and the sort of consecration of Russia and conversion were linked by Our Lady, that means we in the West have got to do our part by promoting the consecration as much as possible. The Five First Saturdays, I should say, as much as possible. So that's why the Five First Saturdays is so important. That's why I'm emphasizing it. You may not have heard much about it before, but it's something that really needs to be pushed. So we go on to the next slide. That just goes quickly, the children. Even that was the aftermath of the vision of hell, the sort of shock, if you like, it created.
You're listening to highlights from a symposium on Fatima held last Saturday in Westminster Cathedral Hall, London, and this followed the historic reconsecration of England and Wales to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
And if we just look at the next one. Now, this is when Our Lady came back, the 10th of December, 1925, to speak about the Five First Saturdays. So this, now she'd spoken about it before, now she came back to Sister Lucia. And if we look on the next slide, I'll sort of quickly go through this. It's a devotion of reparation. So Our Lady appeared with the child Jesus, and she spoke about all the, you know, the blasphemies and so on, and the symbol was her Immaculate Heart with thorns in it, the thorns, you know, the sins. So she promised to assist at the hour of death with all the graces necessary for salvation. So if we look on the next slide, everyone who goes to the first Saturday of five consecutive months, confession, Holy Communion, 5 decades of the Rosary, and meditating on the Rosary. So this is not asking a huge amount really of us. An hour and a half, say a month. We do it first of all for ourselves. We do the five first Saturdays. Then we can do it for members of our family or the parish or just for world peace or anything. But it is really important that first Saturday's movement starts to spread throughout the country and you know, in London and everywhere. It goes on in some parishes, but not nearly enough. So that's what's required. Confession. The next slide shows confession, Holy Communion, five decades of the Rosary, and meditation. So it's not a huge ask, as it were, once a month. Now on the next slide, we just come on. This was in 1929. So this is when Our Lady came back to speak about the consecration of Russia. So the Holy Trinity vision, and then Our Lady said on the next slide, the moment has come in which God asked the Holy Father, in union with all the bishops of the world, to make the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart, promising to save it by this means. So the important thing then, again, these the two things linked, you know, the five first Saturdays, consecration. We then had to come forward to the time of John Paul II before things started to happen with the consecration. That was the assassination attempt in 1981. Then on the next slide, the Pope did the consecration in 1984. So what we're saying really is that the Pope and the bishops did the consecration in 1984, so now it's up to the priests and the laity to promote the five first Saturdays. And that then is one of the factors that will bring about the conversion of Russia, and then we'll start to see things happen in a really big way. The important thing is the collegial consecration was accepted, and Sister Lucia said this to the Apostolic Nuncio in Portugal, accepted by heaven. And then we started to see all the things, the fall of the Berlin Wall, collapse of communism, which didn't have to happen because you had Tiananmen Square where the communists put their foot down in China. So it didn't have to happen. So if we go on to the next slide, Sister Lucia talked linking the five first Saturdays and the consecration even in 1939 and talking about there would only be world peace when that was happening. So in a nutshell, we just need to promote the five first Saturdays in a big way. So I hope when you go away, you'll take that with you and try and start it in your parish. Get involved in promoting Fatima in whatever way you can. And if you've got any specific skills, come and see us before you go, and we'll certainly put that to good use. Thanks for your kind attention. I hope that made some sense.
Now, have we got a question? If you could stand up and talk into the microphone.
The lady's asking about, she says there's a doubt in her mind as to whether the Pope was in union with all the bishops. Is that right, when he made the consecration? The Pope was in union with all the bishops. That is what Our Lady asked for. If you read in Vatican Nuncio's own words, that it very clearly stated that the moment has come when God asks the Pope, in union with all the bishops, to make the consecration of the world to Mary's Immaculate Heart. That was exactly what he had to do it again, actually, because he did it in 1982 when he first went to Fatima. But because of the way it was carried out at that time, not all the bishops had received his request to join with them in making the act. So when it was done in 1984, he'd already sent out an invitation with the copy of the act he was going to make to the bishops. I think it was posted on the 8th of December. It was 3 months at least in advance. So every single bishop had been notified. And that was the union that was desired. It was the union of the chief shepherd with all the bishops. And that was obtained. And Sister Lucia, I can give you a copy of a document with seven separate statements by Lucia affirming, including one statement she made to Cardinal Tarsicio Bertone, Secretary of State to Benedict XVI, in which she affirmed categorically that the heaven had accepted it and Our Lady was pleased with the consecration. She repeated that seven times. But there have been voices in the church. You want to pay... Let me tell you, because there's a certain source that I'm not going to bother with naming that has been an absolute pest on this subject, because they refuse to accept the truth, and all they want to do is to peddle their own propaganda and their own agenda. And so That is why there has been so much confusion on this issue. Pay no attention to it at all. Listen to the Pope, listen to the Bishop of Fatima, and above all, listen to the seer chosen by Our Lady.
You're listening to Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Celtic Connections is the only show made in the UK or Ireland with the Catholic view of what's happening in Great Britain, Ireland, and across Europe. Stay tuned for more Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott.
We finish our special programme on the consecration of Fatima by listening to His Eminence Cardinal Vincent Nicholls' homily on the occasion of the historic reconsecration of England and Wales to the Immaculate Heart of Mary in this, the centennial year, on the 18th of February, 2017.
In the year 2000, the great Jubilee year, a crowd of well over 500,000 people gathered in Rome. It was the 13th of May, and they were together for the beatification of Francisco and Jacinta Marto. In that crowd, there were many children who were dressed up in honor of these newly beatified shepherd children who had, in 1917, been privileged to receive the apparitions of Our Lady of Fatima. In the homily that day, Pope St. John Paul II said this: "Dear boys and girls, I see so many of you dressed like Francisco and Jacinta. You look very nice. But in a little while, or tomorrow, you will take these clothes off, and the little shepherds will disappear. But they should not disappear, should they? Our Lady needs you to console Jesus, who is sad because of the bad things done to him. He needs your prayers and your sacrifices for sinners." It's lovely that today we have three children who are dressed just as the many children were in the year 2000, as the children of Fatima were dressed 100 years ago today. Now, the words spoken by Pope St. John Paul II contain the real challenge, not just for the excitable children on a visit to Rome, but for us too. It's this: how well do you and I every day express our discipleship of Christ? How are we getting on in the two ways of giving time to the Lord and to others? In those two ways, prayer and sacrifice. Now, our response to this challenge can be guided, sustained, supported by all that we know of Our Lady of Fatima and what she had to say to us. I would like to just emphasize two ways in which Our Lady of Fatima speaks to us today. The first, of course, is her call that we have a devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Now, to understand this well, we take as our starting point the closing words of today's Gospel, when Mary said, "I am the handmaid of the Lord. What you have said, be done to me." Here, Mary is expressing the attitude of her heart. As Pope Benedict has reminded us, in the language of the Bible, the heart indicates the very center of human life, the point where reason, will, and temperament and sensitivity all converge. So Mary, in using those words, was saying yes with her reason, her will, her emotions, her whole being. Devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary is a way for us to say yes to. Yes, from the depth of our hearts, that we hope accord with Mary's, and therefore open up pathways, fresh and sure, towards Jesus. That is why today we consecrate afresh ourselves, our lives, our country, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, so that we can always be saying yes to the Lord, with all our heart, with all our will, from the very center of our being. And only Mary can teach us how to do this.
You're listening to a homily by Cardinal Vincent Nichols, recorded during the Mass for the reconsecration of England and Wales to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Now, for you and I to have this attitude of heart is, to put it mildly, the work of a lifetime. And we need practical help along the way. And this is where we come to the second aspect of the message of Fatima, which is so important: the recitation of the Rosary. Pope St. John Paul said, "The Rosary is my favorite prayer, a marvelous prayer, marvelous in its simplicity and in its depth." And you know that at the heart of the Rosary are more words from today's Gospel: "Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee," said the angel. If there are times when the depth of the prayer of the Rosary may seem too much for us, then we concentrate on its simplicity. And we can know that as we greet Our Lady with these words, the very fact that we are making time to pray is something of great value to her Son. So in doing so, we participate in the prayer and sacrifice of which Pope St. John Paul spoke. Like many of you, I learned to pray the Rosary as a child at home. As a family, we prayed the Rosary together. In my mind's eye, I can still see very, very clearly the pattern of the chairs at which we were kneeling, and the pattern of the carpet, of the floor. Concentrating on the prayer was not always easy, but we tried, and that's what counts. How much I wish that every family today finds time to pray together. What a difference that would make. And this prayer is needed. Pope St. John Paul reminded us that the 100 years since 1917 have seen wars in so many parts of the world, concentration and extermination camps, gulags, ethnic cleansing, terrorism, kidnappings, drugs, attacks on unborn life and on the family. And the church too, we've had our share of troubles. All these things can be very complicated. At times, when the ills of the world or of the church or of our own situations weigh heavily on us, we can remember the lovely phrase of Pope Francis, "Mary's faith unties the knot of sin," he said. Speaking when the statue of Fatima, Our Lady of Fatima, visited Rome in October 2013, he used the words of Saint Irenaeus to explain this. He said, "The knot of Eve's disobedience is untied by the obedience of Mary. What the Virgin Eve bound up by her unbelief, the Virgin Mary loosens by her faith." And in that way, the Gospel reading today is the antidote to the first reading of the fall in the Garden of Eden. Obedience and faith are the antidote to disobedience and unbelief. So, at those times when the knots of life seem particularly tangled, when the knots of sin are tied tightly in our own lives, we do well to turn to our Blessed Lady and seek her intercession. I pray that the pilgrimage of this statue of Our Lady of Fatima on its journey round the cathedrals of England and Wales will be a time of grace for many as they honour Our Lady of Fatima in this centenary year. Now, there's another journey I want to speak about too. A journey that was over in a split second. It was the journey, not of a statue, but of a bullet. 19 years to the day before Jacinta and Francisco were beatified, this bullet sped on its way. It was, as many of you will have guessed, the one fired by Mehmet Ali Agca as he sought to assassinate Pope St. John Paul in St. Peter's Square. That bullet was retrieved from the body of the Pope and sent to Fatima. Then it was placed within Our Lady's crown. This journey from an instrument of death, the gun, to a beacon of reconciliation and hope, Our Lady's crown, is a wonderful allegory of how the prayers of Our Lady and the faith of us believers are far, far more than a nice idea or a good feeling. They can truly change the world. Devotion to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, so central to the message of Fatima, can only begin in the hearts of each one of us. Pope Benedict said, "The heart open to God is stronger than guns and weapons of every kind." These are words that we do well to make our own as this year, a second century of the story of Fatima, begins. Our Lady, Queen of Peace, pray for us. Our Lady of Fatima, pray for us. Amen.
I'd like to thank Timothy and Oliver and all of our friends at the World Apostolate of Fatima, England and Wales, and also Maria Saba and Neil Fairburn and all of the staff at Westminster Cathedral who were so good to us on that very busy day of the consecration, and especially thank the security team. From myself, Kathy Sinnott, all of us here at EWTN, Britain and Ireland, God bless you and thanks for listening. Our Lady of Fatima, pray for us.
You have been listening to Celtic Connections with Cathy Sinnott. Join Cathy Sinnott next time for more Celtic Connections.